Vancouver Island, a land full of rich, diverse cultures where you will find hippies and rednecks at the same local brew pub, blue-collar and white-collar camping side-by-side at the lakes, and old and young and everyone in between with one thing in common, we love our island. Failure is as synonymous with exploring the outdoors as marshmallows are with a campfire. You often see the two together, and your adventures can turn out a golden brown with a completed objective, or burnt to a crisp and coming up short. What you do with either result is up to you. Here are some stories of when I failed real bad in the wild. I gotta admit, this is not my favorite episode to put together. And when I was thinking about the subject matter for talking about a field guide to failure, what that means in exploring the outdoors, it's not really something you want to visit. And all of the memories and things as they came back, it's been a week of just, you know, going through these different times in my life where I really would rather not sit and watch the memory reel, as it were. I don't really want to sit down and remember all of the times that I made a really bad call there, or I could have done real good here if I had just listened or done a little bit more research. But like I said, failure is just as synonymous with outdoors as anything else is. It's something that all of us experience at one time or another if you're an avid outdoors person. So to not talk about it, I feel like, is an injustice in a lot of ways, because to just celebrate the successes, to just come to that place of celebrating the big high moments doesn't really help anybody. And it doesn't really help new adventurers. It doesn't help my kids. It doesn't help the people in my life that I'm hoping to pass on something to. So, for example, I've heard lots of my stories of climbing up the mountain Albert Edward, and the amount of times that I have tried is about 8 different times, ranging from when I was 8 years old till this last year at 34. And out of those 8 times, 3 of them were complete and utter failures, and mostly due to weather. We tried a couple different routes. There's a way that you can go up, if you're familiar with the area, one of the mouths to the Oyster River, which comes out between Black Creek and the Willow Point Campbell River area. You cross it on the bridge as you're going up north, either on the Inland Island Highway or the regular Old Island Highway. And that one of those places the river comes from is Gem Lake, way, way up at the base of Albert Edward. And so when we were kids, our dads all got us together and decided to try to do the short route instead of having to do the 3-day journey. And it was a lot of fun, and it was a big adventure, but in a lot of ways, a pretty big failure too, because we just made it up to the ridge and then we got clouded out. So you're like, oh, one of those failures is kind of like out of your control, but it's still, you still feel it. And I remember still feeling it. I think I was 10 at the time, and you can't help but just like, oh no, but we didn't get there. And so there was that kind of learning of things out of your control failures. And there was a few of those. Another time when we had tried to go up, it was for my sister Kayla. She was her first time to go up Albert Edward. I think that we were maybe 11 or 12 at the time. I'm trying to remember exactly how old, I think somewhere around that age. And we'd hiked up the first day, and then we went up to Circlet Lake, set up camp, did our regular thing. Everything's magical. And then Dad wakes up and he can't really move his back. And so there's this, like, you know, he's got this failure look in his eyes. And I remember walking through that journey and be like, man, like this is tough. This is hard. Like, what are we supposed to do? And I remember having to go to the other campsites and ask if anybody had a sat phone. Like, this was years ago. Like, people didn't really walking around with cell phones. And if they did, there's no way they were going to work up there. So it was a really scary experience in that way. And we just slowly, you know, limped home. And I think even at a young age, what that started instilling in me is that you can be somewhere that you're familiar with. You can be somewhere that feels really, really safe, but a twisted ankle, a bad back, one wrong decision can be, you know, a helicopter ride out. And so I started to hate the idea of failure. And the coming years of going into to high school, you know, finding out who you are, all of that, failure was the one thing that I just could not wrap my head around, and I was not very good at it. Yeah, anyway, a lot of stories, and I'm not going to spiral too far out there. Another time that I remember a failure were coming up short was hiking up the Mount Cusum. Mount Cusum is the tallest mountain in the Prince of Wales Range, which is kind of on the northeast side of Vancouver Island, past Campbell River. You see all of these mountains as you drive past. About 20 minutes past Campbell River, you come to Menzies Mountain. And then you got Kitchener, and you got Mount Roberts and Mount Milner. And then at the very, very, very back, you can see the tallest one, which is Mount Cusum. It has a fantastic tradition of having the Cusum climb, which usually happens every June. And it's this like marathon grunt of going up and over this mountain that basically you start at sea level and then you ascend thousands of feet and do this crazy round route that goes around this mountain. Because I worked at a summer camp during the summers, I never really got into the idea of training and doing an event like the Cusum climb. However, for one of our programs, we did want to do a couple overnight trips and day trips where we started doing more climbs and stuff, where we actually went up and did some summits. So Cusum being in the area, I thought this would be a really fun one to do. And so, I mean, let's give it a shot. So me and two of my buddies who were on the director team with me decided that we would go and do Cusum, and we'd try and go and blitz this thing in a day. And, you know, if hundreds of people come and do the Cusum climb, how hard can it be? My legs have never hurt that bad. That was quite the ups. Like that was, and it was one of the first ones of the season, but it's just straight up from sea level all the way up the side of this mountain. We picked a beautiful bluebird day. It was absolutely fantastic. And none of us had been there before. What I try to do with most of the climbs and outdoor places that I go, even when it's just paddling or hiking, I try to go with somebody who's already been before, if I can. I love that mentorship opportunity to have that experience with somebody and to have their previous journeys be able to pass on what they've learned so that I can have the least amount of failure. Like I said, not a big fan of failure, do not love it. But I love being able to learn from other people's journeys that have already been there before. But we didn't have that option on this one. So we decided, you know what, we've got a great guidebook. And the one that I follow, and I've mentioned this one a couple of times, is Phil Stone's Island Alpine. Has a great, great amount of information on lots of different hikes and stuff. Really, really great. Lots of books. Exploring Strathcona Park, which has got a whole variety of hikes in it. Absolutely beautiful and really well laid out. So we'd, you know, taken pictures on our phones, and we had all the information on these particular routes and where we were going to go. So the Cusum climb goes up to a certain point of a ridge, and then it keeps and wraps around the rest of Cusum Mountain, but it doesn't go up to the actual summit. You come to an area where you have to kind of skirt around this little valley that all of a sudden is a big, huge stone bowl of scree rock. So that's like that loose rock that's falling that you'll see on the sides of mountains and stuff. And so we came, we saw, we got to this bowl, and we looked up, and you could see the peak in front of you. And it's just like a big, again, like a big round stone bowl. And there's one particular place that you get up through one of these, you know, kind of ridges that's there to get up to the summit. And we had a turnaround time. I had to be back. And we, like I said, we were just doing it in a day. And so we did our best and followed the guide and got to this place where we were looking at, a technical ascent. it wasn't the rock scree slope that turns into a nice crack in the rock that you then carry on to the summit. We're looking at the description, and this is nothing like the description. Like, we're looking at, we needed to be roped up, have all of our gear to try to ascend this. Like, it was very technical. For those familiar with like the grading systems and stuff, it was definitely in the more fifth class and up. So we're incredibly devastated. Like, at this point, I know the other guys took it real well, but man, I was so choked. Again, hate failure. I just do not like it. And like, putting a bunch of time and effort, like, my wife's back with the kids, and I'm taking this extra time to be able to do this extra thing, and, you know, all of these things have lined up for this moment, And so I cannot get this picture, you know, out of my head of like, we were probably like 150 feet maximum away from the summit. Like we're looking at it, but it's just impassable. Like we cannot do it. We're at our turnaround time. We have to go back. In order to summit, we would have to go back down, then back up this other ridge. And so sitting there and going, ah, if only I had like read that a little bit better. If only I had, you know, if only. The reason I'm sharing some of these stories is that it's not all about the success. It's not all about the like, wow, look what you accomplished. Like there is a lot of time that goes into failing. And I want to recognize the people that have done that and gone before us. You know, people that have gone to put in the guidebooks, like I said, like Phil Stone's guidebook, like the amount of times that the people that have told the stories that have gone and done the first ascents. I love reading about these stories because they're incredible, an incredible milestone that people have actually conquered these things and continue to do that in discovering these places. But there's a lot of backstory and failings that you just don't get. And I think that we start to create an unrealistic narrative in our own heads. At least I know it's true for me that, well, you know, they did it, so should I. But there's a lot of other times in those people's lives and people even that you know that maybe you look up to and you say, wow, they're an incredible outdoors person and they do all of these fun adventures. And man, it must be really nice to be able to succeed every time. But it's just simply not true. And so if this is you, if this podcast is for you, I hope it resonates with you that failure is synonymous with being an outdoors person. Okay, the final story is probably the hardest one to share, because it's a real close to the heart mess up. When I was, how long ago was this now? I think this is about eight or nine years ago. I had the desire to get into the hunting world, and to start providing meat for our family through that you know, ancient practice. And it really resonated with me with the whole idea of banding together and becoming conservationists and really trying to do a good job of stewarding the land that we have. And so part of that stewardship that happens is a big part is the hunting community. So I'd read up and followed a lot of people that were really quite good at it and had made their lives, you know, revolve around this idea of hunting. And so I was like, that's something that I really want to be able to pass on to my kids. I want them to know, like, if we're going to consume meat, if that's going to be a part of our journey, I would really like it to be in an ethical and there's an understanding of where it comes from. Hunting is a great avenue, I believe, to do that and to be connected with the land, to be able to understand more about the wildlife that we have around and what their impact and what our impact is on them. And as far as I can tell, I don't know any other big organization or group of people other than the hunting community that know more and care more about the wildlife. And that may be a new idea to some, but it's true. There is a lot of thought, a lot of science, and a lot of effort that goes into understanding how to balance these ecosystems that we are in charge of and that we are stewarding. So anyhow, it was something that I was passionate about and wanted to get into. And so I started. I went and did my core course and did that and was really, really happy to get into that. My wife bought me my first gun, and the area that I live in the Comox Valley is most of the area is shotgun only. So you can only use a shotgun and you can only use what's called buckshot. So it's a couple pellets. It's not a single projectile. It's got multiple. And the reason for that is because there's a lot of residents that are close by. And so you have to get in close. It's very, very similar in many, many ways to archery. So you have to hunt really, really close to animals. So you have to get really good in a short amount of period of time in order to actually harvest an animal, and do that in a safe and effective way. So I through some connections, had found an amazing opportunity to hunt on a place that was really close to my house. And so my commute wasn't far, and it was a beautiful chunk of land, a good wildlife corridor, an amazing place to learn. And so I had spent days and days. I can't remember what my log was, but I started journaling it all, and I must have put in, like, I want to say 30 days or something like that in the 90 days, give or take, season. And so it was a substantial amount of time. We had, you know, young ones at home, and so it really was, my wife had really blessed me to just go and do this thing and get good at it. And so I'd spent morning after morning, as many times as I could, just trying to understand and trying to learn. Having it been my first season, it was really quite difficult to understand where and what to do. So I'd reached out to, you know, some friends and stuff, but being the somewhat prideful person that I was, I was like, I'm sure I could just figure it out, and I don't need to necessarily know all the rules, you know. I've got my core. What else do I need? Oh man, if I could talk to my former self and be able to give your head a shake, I would tell him, give your head a shake. So the end of the season's coming up, and which is in December for the area that we're in. And I'd spent all of this time, I hadn't had the opportunity to harvest anything, not even really quite close. Had some really fun experiences. It was really quite fun to learn and see wildlife that close and observe them all, but nothing where I could make an ethical shot that I could be happy with. And so I got a call from one of the places that I was hunting, and they said, yeah, actually there's a buck like right here. Like this is a great opportunity. It's right out here. It's close to the house, but it's moving its way, and you should come over. And so I was like, oh man, this is fantastic. This is great. So I checked with my wife. I said, Liz, is it okay if I go? She said, yeah, totally awesome. Like, go. And it was like midday, probably like 11 o'clock, really close to the end of the season. And so I got onto the property, and there, lo and behold, was this beautiful buck, really nice looking animal. And I was like, oh, good. This is my opportunity. This is great. And I need to get in close. So I worked my way up and slowly got closer and closer. And eventually he stopped and gave me a good solid shot, took my shot, boom, he went down. I was elated. I was like shaking. Like, I was just like, oh, finally, like, you know, like my first season. This is incredible. This is amazing. And so I walked up and sure enough, he's down. And so in order to have a quick death, I wanted to make sure. So I took a second shot, which was needed to be done. And he passed and was like starting this process. Okay, now the work begins, as they say, right? Now we're going to be able to harvest this and provide some meat for my family. And so I'm starting to, you know, go through the process of, okay, how do I gut this thing? How do I go through this next step? And I've never done it before. So you're like ready to make some calls, you know, find a buddy, anything. And then all I hear is yelling. And somebody, one of the neighbors started yelling and was saying like, what are you doing? You're way too close to the house. Like, what are you, idiot? What is going on? And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I just got my deer here. I'm sorry. Like, oh, just so sorry. It's just like, you didn't know what else to say. He stormed off and that was that. And so it was just kind of this mess, right? It was like, oh shoot. Like, I hope that I didn't do anything quite wrong here. And definitely had. So anyhow, I've gotten in contact with somebody who's able to kind of do the butchering process with me and show me what to do. And so that was great, and was able to do that and store it there for the night so it could cool down so that I could begin processing the rest of the animal the next day. Well, my phone died like shortly after that, and I couldn't get a hold of anybody. And so I was like, oh, whatever, I'll just drive back home. But then, I was able to, I think, power it up or something. I'm trying to remember that part, but anyhow, what ended up happening is I got a call that the conservation officers had come by, my house and did talk to my wife and were looking for me. And that my house is not where I was hunting. I was hunting at a different property. And then the property owners as well had said, yeah, there's some COs here. So I'm driving home after, you know, skinning this deer, having this first experience, having just like, my head is just swimming. My phone's dead. And so I don't know if they've been trying to contact me or not for the conservation officers or what it was. But as I was driving by, I was able to see the conservation officer's truck on the property that I was driving by on my way home. And I kept driving. I was like, oh, it'll work itself out. And I stopped. I was like, no, this is on me and the people that own that property. They shouldn't have to deal with this. That's on me. So I stopped, I turned around, and came walking down the field towards these two conservation officers that were on this property. And so I started walking towards them, and they said, hello. And I said, hi. I said, I think I'm the one you're looking for. And they says, oh, really? And I was like, yeah. I said, I heard that there was some sort of problem or whatever. And so they got a call, and so they wanted to see where I'd harvested the deer and kind of go through the process of what I had done to kind of check to make sure that everything had been done well. And in the back of my head, I'm going, I was way too close to the residence. Inside the regulations for hunting in BC, you cannot be any closer than 100 meters to any living residence, any outbuilding that people are living in. And I was definitely closer, but in my head, you start to rationalize things in those moments. You're like, oh, no. It was definitely like 15 meters. Like, well, that's 15 meters from the road, not from the house. 100 meters from the house. And so I kind of wanted to see how this was going to play out. And my head is just like absolutely spinning at this point. Like, I really do not know which way is up and what I should do other than be honest. And so they walk over and like, okay, so it's like, is this where you did it? It was like, yeah, I was right around this area. Like, were you standing right here? It's like, yeah. So is this where he fell? Yeah. Is this your shotgun shell? Yeah. Like fully 100% busted in that moment. And I said, do you know how far you need to be away from a residence? And I was like, 30 meters? And they're like, try 100. And so I'm sitting there and I'm just like completely busted. And I'm standing with these two guys and it's like, yeah, no, you're right. And they're kind of trying to figure out like what to do with this young man. What judgment are they going to pass? And so it was this long process and they said, okay, like we're going to have to take down your statement and stuff like that. And so, they start with the, like, this can be used against you in court. And that's when your heart just starts like racing. You're like, I'm going to jail for this. Like what? Oh man. Like, oh, how could I have failed this badly? And so they're reading me my rights and I'm going through this and I say, yeah, okay, sure. And they get my statement. I tell them what I did and I'm just broken in that moment. Like, I just do not even know what to think or where to go or who to talk to. I'm just at the mercy of these two gentlemen. And so they say, all right, well, we're going to have to go and kind of sort this out. So just, give us a few minutes. And so I just stood there and I stood in the place of like where I had taken the shot and I'm replaying everything through my head and just feeling the lowest of lows, like they're gonna slap handcuffs on me and send me to prison. I was thinking the worst things possible. And so they went to their truck and they're, discussing. And I can only imagine what the conversation was like from their perspective. Like, what do we do with this guy who just gave us all the information? But anyway, I'm standing there and I'm shaking and, trying to hold back tears. Like, I really let everybody down. I've let everybody who was a mentor to me in this area down. I've let my family down. There's just so many pieces to it that I don't even know what to do with. And, oh man, I just messed up. So I stand there and I wait and they come back and they say, you know what, actually, we're going to have to seize the deer. So I'm going to need you to get that and bring that back to us. I'm going to need you to sign this document here and you're going to get a fine. And it was a hefty fine. Like, it was about $600. And rightly so. Like, I was completely in the wrong. And I said, yeah, no, that's fair. And so, they thanked me for being honest and for bringing that forward. But man, was it a hard thing to walk through. So why tell the story? Why bring that up? Why dredge up this failure that really does not make me look like the best decision maker in the world? because those conservation officers taught me something about myself in that moment, because they had compassion. They really could have gone nuts as far as what they had done, because I had really made some pretty poor decisions. I had made some calls that were completely wrong, and I didn't know all of these rules. But what they taught me was that I really do need to know what I'm doing if I'm going to do it well. And if I'm going to represent myself and my family and those that have been mentors to me, that those that have poured into me and given opportunity to grow, I need to do them right by that way. I need to show them that I am worthy of what they have poured into me. And so I remember, you know, bringing the meat the next day, and then they were, I was like, you know, like, what do you guys do with it? Like, does it get destroyed? What happens is, no, it goes to families that, you know, don't have as much opportunity, you know, that may be a little bit down on their finances and stuff, and they can apply to have this meat, and it can be used for them. And I was just like very relieved. I was like, oh, at least that part of it is going to something good. And I had some really good conversations with them afterward, you know, like just talking through, like, you know, you can only learn from this. You can only grow from this. And I was very, very humbled. And it was a very real and raw experience. But it was something that I was able to walk away from and know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it well. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it to, you know, the way that these rules are set out, because they're set out for a reason. And I'm not above them. And that's an important thing to remember. Whether you're hiking in the backcountry and you're going to go, you know, past the boundaries in that ski hill, or whether you're going to, you know, paddle to that new location and you really don't have the rescues down on how to bail out your canoe, or you don't have that communication device to go on that 5-day trip way off in the middle of nowhere. There are times and moments in all of our outdoor journeys for those that want to be those professional or even just, you know, semi-professional or just for fun outdoors people, to do things well, to represent those around you and the incredible gift that you have in the mentors and people that have poured into you. Because you don't just represent yourself, you represent those that have poured into you and the experiences that they have had and all of the amazing knowledge that they have passed on to you. There's something that we have. And so this is part of that journey for me, is that I have a responsibility and I have things that I have learned in my life that I want to pass on to people. Like, do your due diligence. That's my takeaway for this week. If I have a tip of anything, do your due diligence. Know the rules of the thing that you want to do. You know, if it's where you should be hiking, what you should be doing when you're paddling, getting your, you know, your first aid for if you're responsible for other individuals. There's a whole host of things, but like, make sure, like, if you're going to do something, do it well and do it respectfully, and do it while you're abiding the laws that are put into place, because those laws were put in there for a very specific reason, to protect people. And so, yeah, anyhow, thanks so much for listening. I hope that this wasn't too much of a downer, but I think that it's important for all of us to face our failures and to recognize them for what they are. And they are fabulous teachers. They really, really are. As much as they're difficult, as much as they suck, and as much as they can be very, very, very hard to pass on a story or whatever the thing was that you failed on. But it is important to be able to do that so that other people can grow. So if you can't do it for yourself, do it for that young one. Do it for that family member. Do it for that friend, or that person that is in more of a learning apprenticeship role with you as an outdoors person. Because if we can all do that, I feel like we can make the outdoors a safer and more fantastic place for all. Thanks so much for listening and for taking the time to join us on this Wild Islander Wednesday. I hope that you'll stay tuned, as we've got guests and different fun opportunities coming up here on the horizon. So I promise they won't be as serious as this one, but we're looking forward to hearing some more successes. And hey, I'm going to continue to be an outdoors person who's going to make mistakes. So you'll probably hear some more of the mistakes as we go along. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much for listening. If you've been enjoying the Wild Islander podcast, leave us a review on whatever podcast platform that you have found to be your home for a podcast like the Wild Islander. Thanks so much for all your input, for your feedback and suggestions. Keep them coming. We want to make this a fantastic resource for the people of Vancouver Island.